Hey, good people. Thanks for joining me, Pam Booker, host of Where's Your Tree, a podcast series dedicated to liberating storytelling and conversations on green topics, social change, and sustainable living. On this episode, part of a two-segment series, we explore the idea of joyful dirt, a term that considers both the metaphor for daily living and impetus for cultivating the creatively applied practice for artists. The notion of a rooted practice of how one commits to a grounding of self while giving shape to the publicly expressed personal voice speaks to toiling the soil, although differently, but through an imaginative, sustainable art practice, such as embodied in my featured guest, Rosamond King. A prolific poet, educator, and performing artist, Rosa articulates for us her sense of writing that gives expression to what you think is necessary to be in the world. We'll hear more from her in just a moment. Joyful dirt, though, is a phrase that I borrowed from one of my social media groups, Edible Gardening by Black Girls with Gardens. I enjoy the cross-exchanges that happen in this group. They're always supportive, and folks eagerly share their growing techniques, challenges, and resources. Recently, a member posted photos of her robust-looking tomatoes. Now, tomatoes have always been an unreliable crop for me, but when I saw images of her succulent, plump harvest, I immediately wanted to learn more about her strategies. One of the organic soil products she used was something called joyful dirt. Everyone in the group was like, really? Is that a thing? Now, I'm not offering product endorsements, but you can look it up for yourself. It claims, and I quote, to enhance plant growth, health, and disease resistance. Wow. I thought, if only I could dip into that bag of soil enhancements on a daily basis as a way of grounding and rooting the many moving parts of my life. Joy and dirt, dirt and joy. Initially, the two words appear to be linguistically opposing ideas, don't they? Dirt is almost always a noun, soil's grimier sounding synonym. Joy, on the other hand, can be both a noun and a verb, something that can be received and given, such as pleasure or a gratifying experience. At the same time, I've been thinking about how both these words and their traits provide rich, sustainable properties that support mental and emotional health, nurturing, and can offer vital composting properties, so to speak, when needed. Think of these two ingredients as fuel for the gut, the heart, and brain cells. Joy and dirt potentially nurture our most vigorous rituals and routines for the creative, spiritual, and practical intentions that drive our momentum for radical rejuvenation, but only if we allow these elements to conspire on our behalf. Some of you recall the Peanuts character Pigpen. I've contemplated on and written about the existential Charlie Brown more than I care to admit. In particular, I've seen Pigpen as the Jungian shadow figure who disorders life's contentment. For some, he disrupts joy. I always saw him as the poor kid or the child of color who arrived to Charlie Brown's sheltered white neighborhood in a cloud of dusty, sooty tracks. Visually, that boy was a hot mess, leaving his peers and their parents uneasy with the way he looked and suspecting that he would never conform to their model expectations. When in truth, if we're patient, we stand to learn precious lessons from Pigpen's tattered abandonment in that to stir up dirt, not petty conflict, but soul-stirring dirt, toxins, the stuff of inner conflict, is really about stirring up the dirty deities that reside in us all. Healthy internal and social metabolisms are reclaimed, I think, through more complex acts of gratitude, resistance, and benevolence. As much for our collective reparations, it may be more as an act of discerning self-cleansing. Next up, poetical joy with heaps of lyrical dirty pleasure with Rosamond King. I first met Rosamond King, who I call Rosa, when she was a doctoral student at NYU and part of a mutual circle of artists, activists, and friends with strong Caribbean roots. She probably wouldn't remember, but I attended my first Juve on the eve of Brooklyn's legendary West Indian Day Parade with her and her eclectic posse. Those were heady, fun times. I also used to tease her that I wanted to be like her when I grew up. And that wish hasn't changed a bit all these years later. Widely adored for her beautiful spirit, mind, and quirky laughter, Dr. Rosamond S. King is a respected, beloved scholar and educator, a dynamic interdisciplinary writing artist and a performance practitioner, but it's the elegant, playful trysts with language that she dances with unabashedly that emboldens her Lamba Literary award-winning book collection, Rock, Salt, Stone. One of the things I was interested in, you know, sort of thinking about this notion of erotic art, much like what Audre Lorde, you know, part of her legacy gave us, and this notion of art and nature and how it informs your work.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for having me. I mean, I wouldn't have thought myself that I would be invited to participate in something about nature, actually, because I don't think of myself as a nature person. But in kind of preparing for this and thinking about this, and thinking about you as someone who I admire, who always kind of goes for the thing that you want and that you believe in, I did really kind of think about how, in a way, language is my land, is my earth, right? And the body is my land. Because I've moved around so much and because my people are in different places and in different countries, the body itself is a kind of, to me, earth or land. And if you think about joyful dirt, part of what I'm interested in is not just the beautiful parts of the body, but the parts that might be smelly or that people might call nasty, or, you know, all of the different ways that our body can produce and behave and be and move in the world.
I remember some years ago in one of my programs, a student from Colombia. And this is around the time when Perel was becoming popular. And she made the comment, "You Americans have an aversion to smell," right? Mm-hmm. And I'd never thought about it, but it rings true when we think of, you know, we are just hyper-focused and hypersensitive, and of course for some very, you know, legitimate reasons, but also, you know, to the point of, you know, the spraying of these various substances in the air and the obsessive ways, you know, and the products that we have to care for our body. But this notion of the body being almost like a representation of the planet, in a way, speaks to your very sort of multicultural locations. Share some of that with us and how that has influenced both those ideas of geography in a very sort of literal way, but also how you found your way comparatively, because I remember you did comparative studies into your work.
Yeah. Well, it's in a way, it's about diaspora, right? Because you start in one place, because we each have kind of, you know, you're born in a place and you're born to people. And I happen to be born to parents who are from different countries. And I was born in a third country, right? So I have Africa, the Caribbean, the United States. I have the whole diaspora. And that's kind of the literal sense of okay, well, if I can't be in all three of those places at the same time, in a way, those places are in me. Mm. But it also, it comes out in the work in the sense that when you look at my work, the poems don't all look the same. Mm-hmm. They're not all lined up on the left side. They don't all use the same type of language in them. And that's, for me, also embracing this sense of wherever I am. People often say, well, where is home for you? And I will say, well, home is where my feet are. Mm-hmm. So in this moment, this is home. Mm-hmm. And I'm okay with that. I know for some people that's destabilizing and other people, you know, have other desires. But I have come to be okay with that.
Was that something you had to grow into, or how did you slowly recognize that, this comfort of being from, you know, multiple diasporas?
I think that I was always comfortable with it, but couldn't articulate it. Mm-hmm. I found out as an adult that my parents had been worried that, because we only lived in one place for more than 3 years when I was growing up.
And are you an army brat?
Actually, my father went into the military on the condition they would not move him. Uh-huh. It was racism and xenophobia that had us bouncing around the United States of America. So that's a longer story, probably for a different podcast. But yeah, when he went into the military, that's when we stayed put. And they had been worried that they were traumatizing us by moving us. And that would have traumatized some people. But for some reason, I have this memory of, look, because we drove everywhere, looking out the back of the car window and waving goodbye to where we were leaving and then turning around excited for what was to come. Mm-hmm. But as I got older, I realized that that really was troubling to other people, that I didn't have a specific home and that it bothered other people. And so I had to come up with a way to kind of explain it in a way that would make sense and kind of comfort people who were discomforted by my comfort. If that makes sense.
Yes, that is a very fascinating and telling entanglement.
Yeah.
But it speaks very much to who you are in your ability to be able to allow people to find their comfort level and their ease. Mm-hmm. And to not overwork it, because ultimately they do have to find their way there. In thinking, too, about this notion of, moving body, transplanting body, you are also a movement person,
yes,
a dancer. How did you find your way to that? And how have you found the movement to influence your writing?
Mm-hmm. I have been dancing since I was 3. Formally kind of taking classes. And if you ask my grandmother, who is no longer here, I've been dancing since I came out the womb, running up and down the house, dancing everywhere. And I've just always loved to move. And I think, again, thinking about my relationship with nature, now when I was young, I started off with ballet and tap and jazz and Martha Graham modern and fairly conventional, quote unquote, mainstream forms of dance. And as an adult, I've done almost exclusively African and Caribbean dance and to some degree circus arts. And all of those things are done barefoot. And so one of my connections with the earth, mm-hmm, is just standing, dancing, jumping, and you land, and the earth is still there. Mm. When I choreograph, Twyla Tharp in her memoir, she talks about for her when she's going to choreograph, the big thing is getting in a cab, which first of all speaks to her class position.
Yes.
That once she gets in the cab on the way to the studio, then she knows she's good and she knows she can make something.
Is that her Creative Habits?
Yes,
book?
Which, yeah, is a lovely book. Yeah. It's a, yeah, lovely, inspirational book. But for me, it's getting up. It's laying on my back on the floor and thinking, I can get up. Mm-hmm. And if I can get up and move, then I can create movement. So movement is it's very much a part of who I am. And often people encounter me just as a poet or just as a scholar or just as a movement person, and they don't know that I am all of these things, which is fine. But to me, it's all the same project. Mm-hmm. It's really all connected. And in terms of the poetry is kind of dancing on the page, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's part of where it is. And also the fact that I really enjoy performing, and the movement, the in a way physical or sonic movement of my voice, mm-hmm. The modulation of my voice is also a kind of movement when I'm able to present the work live. The whole point of writing is to be able to give expression to what is important, what you feel like is necessary to be in the world. And so, no, I don't kind of sit down and think, okay, this is going to be a woman poem or a queer poem or so on. And what's really interesting to me is that I don't always know what will resonate with which audience. Mm-hmm. And that's what's also fun about performing the work.
I'd like to close out this just amazing discussion with you and having you share some parts of one of my favorite poems, in search of the word, is
in
it?
A word.
Mm-hmm. In search of a word.
Yes.
And if you want to talk a little bit about it to set it up for us.
Sure. This is a poem that the non-English words are in Wolof. They're numbers, and Wolof is a beautiful, many languages are beautiful, but one of the things that's beautiful about Wolof in particular is that the numbers build on each other. So Bena, Nyar, Nyeta, Nyenent, Jurum is 1 through 5, and then 6 is Bena Nyar, right? Mm. Bena Nyenent, Bena Nyar. And so that's what happens kind of during the poem is this accumulation of language that hopefully, even if you don't understand what the words mean, you notice this accumulation while the narrative part of the poem is about kind of searching for a way to explain an experience. Mm-hmm. This other language is building up on top of it. That's helpful. So, in search of a word, Bena, Nyar, Nyeta, Nyenent, Jurum, Jurum Ben. When you have language but no one to speak it with, eventually the words fall on the ground unremembered. Jurum Nyar, Jurum Nyeta, Jurum Nyenent, Fuk, Fukak Ben. Right? And now this is all. Nangadef, hello, how are you? And then hands up, stopping, code switching. I don't know anymore. Dege all of tutiriak. Fukak nyan, fukak nyet, fukak nyanen, fukak jorum, fukak jorabena. I will not ask you to count what got left behind. Do you remember December? Lesbian was only said once, but love 3 or 4 times. Do you remember December? Maybe should have waited for summer daylight at least, so it wouldn't all seem so foreign. This was one of the things of this country from which we were trying to save you. Yes, your grammar was perfect. There is not even a word for this in our language. Do you want this sentence back? I give it to you now, clean, polished from years of repetition, without malice, just it is yours, and I don't want it anymore. There are words for this in our language. Dum jujigen, yai mama. Dum jugor, papa bai, sissy, auntie, cousin, uncle. Nyara fukuk jurum nyet. Umar, Benjamin. Jurum nyet, fukuk jurum nyet. Rosamond, Olufunke, Tamirak ben. In our language, there are words for knob, beg, love.
Thank you, Rosa. It was beautiful. I've so enjoyed our time together.
Thank you so much. This has been great fun and illuminating.
How delicious to the ear.
You can learn more about Rosa and her collection of award-winning poems at her website, rosamondking.com. That's RosaMondKing.com. Reach me at my website, wheresyourtree.com, without the question mark, or Pamela at wheresyourtree.com. Please drop a line, share your thoughts, and share the podcast with friends. Thanks for listening, and join us again for the next segment of Joyful Dirt. Until the next time, be still, stand in love, pay attention. Ciao.